with us on the studio line for a featured guest conversation, Dr. David C. Corton. David is the president and founder of the People-Centered Development Forum, chair of the board of Yes Magazine, and a board member of the Business Alliance of Local Living Economies. He's the author of The Great Turning, The Post-Corporate World, and When Corporations Rule the World, and now most recently a book, Agenda for a New Economy, From Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth. I have in front of me his longest bio, and let me just say I'm impressed with it, and it's in the back of the book, so when our listeners read Agenda for a New Economy, they can see the credentials that David has, particularly as a business person, co-chair of the New Economy Working Group formed in 2008 to formulate and advance a new economy agenda. There's a lot going on around the country under the surface of what the mainstream news tells us about bailouts and rescuing and all that. David, I welcome you to the show. Levi Ben-Shmuel with us in studio, our co-host, for a three-way conversation. And again, welcome.
I'm very delighted to be with you.
Levi, you want to kick off? You have a first question here?
Yeah, David, it's great to have you with us. On the cover of your book, you have the subtitle From Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth, and at the very top of the book, you have a very provocative statement, Why Wall Street Can't Be Fixed and How to Replace It. Could you give us an overview of why you believe Wall Street can't be fixed?
Yeah, very good question. The basic message of the book is that we're not dealing with a broken system that needs to be fixed, but we're rather dealing with a defective system that needs to be replaced. And it involves looking at what Wall Street actually does. We have concentrated the control of the issuance and allocation of money in the institutions of Wall Street, which have structured themselves in a way that their sole value is money, and their sole goal is to make as much money as possible, no longer even for shareholders, but most specifically for the managers, top managers of the big banks and funds. And that's what we see playing out in these just absolutely obscene bonus packages. Now, the basic idea is that is no way to run a society. In a society in which we depend on money for most every aspect of life, the people who control the creation and allocation of money basically rule the whole society. And to have a society ruled by a system that is designed simply to enrich its own managers at the top by creating what I call phantom wealth, which is creating money out of nothing without producing anything of real value, in the process, that is a path to collective suicide, and that's what we're moving toward. Our issue is not only financial collapse, it is also our collapsing environmental systems and our social systems that are collapsing under the weight of unsustainable inequality.
Speak, if you would, David, about this concept of phantom wealth versus real wealth. Just define what you mean by each and how they differ.
Yeah, it's a very foundational issue that we're encouraged to think of money as wealth. Is quite striking to me, coming out of one level of business school background, both as a student and then teaching on the Harvard Business School faculty, to realize that our very language gives us no means to distinguish clearly between money and real wealth. Now, the key here is that money is nothing but a number. I mean, this is nothing esoteric. It's something everybody knows if you just step back and think about it. It's an accounting chit. Money in its pure form has no intrinsic value, no substance. It has no real existence outside of the human mind. And yet we've given over power to money to essentially rule our lives. It's created simply in our current system when a bank issues a loan. Now, Wall Street has become a master at creating money out of nothing while producing nothing in return. So what it's been doing is creating enormous claims against the real wealth of the rest of society. So, okay, what is real wealth? Well, at the first level, it's anything that has real value, either utility or artistic value, to contribute something to our lives. Most basic are forms of real wealth are land, labor, technology, ideas, education. All of these are aspects of real wealth. But of course, the most valuable of all forms of real wealth are those that are beyond price, which would be love, a healthy, happy child, a meaningful job that gives us a sense of creative contribution to our community. It's a healthy, natural environment. It's a strong, caring community. All of these things are aspects of real wealth that find no place in the accounting systems of Wall Street or any other financial documents. So the key here is that we have first of all lost our sense of the differentiation, the difference between pure money and real wealth, which is reflected, as I noted earlier, in our language. And if, you know, specifically our terms assets, capital, wealth. None of those terms make any distinction between whether we're talking about money or whether we're talking about things that are real, either the most basic forms of land and so forth, or those things that are that really reflect the quality of our lives. And so, failing to make that distinction, we end up with a system that is focused on creating phantom wealth for a few people, basically through a process, an economic process that over time has been depleting our real social and natural capital, the ties of trust, the working bonds of community, and the natural wealth of our natural systems. Converting that real wealth into financial assets for a very few people, and then through the gimmickry of our gross national product, gross domestic product, which we use as the measure of economic performance, we convince ourselves that we are in fact getting wealthier as the few get richer in financial terms. Even as a society and as a species, we are getting poorer because we are actually destroying the foundations of our real wealth as well as of life itself. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you might say it's a, we're engaged in an act of collective insanity, as a result of a truly defective financial system. So that's why, you know, that comes back to why I say Wall Street can't be fixed, or might be more accurate to say it shouldn't be fixed. Our focus should be on replacing it.
As they say, it's taken a while for the jig to be up, or whatever the cliche might be. Whatever's hitting the fan right now is a result of all this. This is the problem. And maybe we can talk a little more about some of the specific issues in our financial systems, including Wall Street, but also some of the dynamics and economic models that we have been strapped with. And Levy has a question about that to begin that conversation, David.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, David, there are so many assumptions that are taken as gospel in the economic world and then get taken as truth in the greater culture. And one of the big ones is that you cite in your book, economic growth is both good and necessary. Now, you point out in a world of finite resources, this doesn't have a good shot of working in the long run. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea that infinite economic growth, which is really infinite growth in consumption, is possible on a finite planet just doesn't work. One of our most thoughtful economists, Kenneth Boulding, once said that anybody believes that you can have infinite growth on a finite planet is either a madman or an economist.
That's good.
It's pretty straightforward. Now, one of the, you know, it's so interesting. We all get so conditioned to these fallacies that, you know, even those like myself who spent a lot of time thinking about them don't always get through to the truth right away. But as soon as you hear it, you recognize it instantly. I was on a panel about a year ago with Joshua Farley, who is an ecological economist. This is a group of economists that recognize that the economy really should be about people and nature and not just about money. I was really struck when Joshua pointed out that gross domestic product, which we use as a measure of beneficial output, is actually a measure of the economic cost of producing whatever level of well-being we are actually achieving, which suggests that we have been managing our economy to maximize cost rather than to maximize benefit. And, of course, if you manage a business to maximize cost, you go bankrupt. And that is something of the equivalent of what we have now achieved as a nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something to be real proud of, huh?
Yeah, something to be real proud of. but you know, this goes to the real depth of the changes we need to now navigate. That we've got to turn this whole process around and focus on actually reducing our GDP in countries like the United States, where we're already engaged in consumption way beyond our own means. At the same time as increasing our well-being. And it turns out there's a lot of ways we can do that. We can actually live much better with less consumption. But, that's not the task to which our best minds are currently directed.
Yeah. Well, you know, this idea of trickle-down benefits and that the massive consumption that has been perpetrated over the last, not even that long a period of time, maybe it's only 100 years or so, plus or minus, has created this, the disappearing middle class. And as you point out, the economic system and Wall Street and the whole financial system that we have now only serves a very small percentage. Maybe we can take a break here and you might give us some statistics. I know that most of the wealth is concentrated in the hands of the few. But let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more. Our featured guest, David Korten, on the line. We are talking about Agenda for a New Economy, From Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth, his newest book. We'll be back.